Okay, and that was, I'm sorry, Allman Brothers Band, right? Allman Brothers and
Dreams.
And we're gonna switch gears here, and Ear Buddies.
Yep.
Is leaving the studio, and it's time for our legal ID. We are 91. We are WMFO Medford. That's WMFO in Medford, also known as Tufts Free Forum, commercial free, community based radio, also known as Tufts Educational Radio. And we want to welcome everyone. We are going to start 2 hours of talk and music called Socialist Alternative Radio, talk and music from a working class democratic socialist perspective. We're going to start off with talking about some elections that happened here in the U.S. And you know, I am going to mention where we're talking from and what we're talking about, because we do have listeners from around the country and internationally, we've discovered, which we're very glad we do, and thanks for listening. And if you can bear with us, we're going to do some local stuff, but we will get to some national, international stuff as well. First thing is the midterm elections that just happened here in the United States, including some referendum questions here in Massachusetts and some others around the country that happened, and we're going to talk about those. But we're going to start with a referendum question that was only in Massachusetts, called Question One, and it was about mandating that hospitals had to negotiate with the nurses to over safe staffing levels in hospitals. By the way, my name's Jeff, and my co-host today is
Diego.
And this staffing levels were going to be obviously increased by such a negotiation, and it would lead to better healthcare. Basically, it would have led to better healthcare, because if you're from Massachusetts or you follow what happened with the question, it went down to defeat. It was polling positively. Not that long ago, the elections were there last week, about, or the week before, 2 weeks ago. And, Tuesday, a week ago, Tuesday. And then it started to switch. The tide started to turn, as they say. And, this was because the hospital corporations, which are huge, most, things have switched in the United States from an era of heavy regulation of medical care back in the 60s and 70s, into a for-profit, deregulated, privatized, so to speak, model. Instead of like a lot of municipal hospitals, you have just straight-up private hospitals. And if you have still municipal hospitals in places, which there are some, what you have is they're being run as a business, as a corporation. And the for-profit hospitals are mostly even called, perhaps all called, nonprofits, but that means nothing. That's just a tax dodge. They don't have to pay taxes, but they still make a lot of money, invest money in businesses, keep their money in the Cayman Islands with all the rest of the capitalists, hiding their money from taxation and so on, even further, hiding their money in general. The Massachusetts Nurse Association, you know, did some really good information, put out some really good information about how the hospitals, instead of taking their profits and investing in healthcare, improved healthcare, they were taking their profits and hiding them in offshore accounts in the Cayman Islands and so on, giving the administrators extremely bloated salaries. In Worcester, Massachusetts, where I've been doing a lot of political work over the last few years, a lot of organizing. There's a hospital called UMass Memorial, and this is quite typical. And Worcester, Massachusetts, is the second largest city in Massachusetts. They had a healthcare clinic in a very poor neighborhood called Bromley Heath, and it had been in existence for a while, and it wasn't that expensive. It cost like $2 million or something. So, UMass Memorial says they're going to close it down. Right. So there were these series of public hearings that members of Socialist Alternative and others went to, community activists, and basically Bromley Heath says, the hospital says, we really have to close this down. And so somebody, actually a member of Socialist Alternative, stood up and said, okay, so this cost, we've already figured out this costs $2 million a year. What is your salary? He said to one administrator up on the stage, guess what it was?
$2
million. Yeah, $2 million, yeah. The salary of this administrator could have paid for the entire operation. And of course, there's only one administrator. So anyway, getting back to the main point, Question One was defeated with an avalanche of corporate propaganda. on the airwaves. If you watch regular TV or you listen to the radio, you were inundated. If you're on social media, you were also somewhat inundated. I remember getting, you know, my social media, of course, is skewed to the left, given Facebook's algorithms and the type of things that I ask for email updates on and so on. So, but even so, I was getting corporate propaganda against question one, vote no on one. And it was very insidious. And I would write back saying, you know, this is, for me, this is propaganda, this is spam. I don't want it. I still get it, you know. But especially just on the TV and on the radio, it was nasty. And it just buried the question one ads. And the M&A, I'm not blaming the M&A. They did, the Master Associates did a good job with the, you know, going door to door, having rallies, standouts. They did a really good job countering, very scientifically actually, and very well, the propaganda of the corporate, of the hospitals. And in the end, though, as in a lot of politics in America, in any capitalist country, money rules, you know. Like a lot of people lately are, including actually members of Socialist Alternative, and I think it's a bit of a mistake, is saying that, well, look at Sanders. When Sanders ran, he ran on asking for small, you know, he wouldn't take corporate money, ask for small donations, right? And so let's think about that for a second. Basically, two things. One is Sanders is known, if you do the research, he's known as the best fundraiser from the super rich and corporations in the Senate. But not for that election. When he ran in 2016, for Senate Democrats, even though he was technically an independent, he would go around and raise money in this area. He'd go to like Abby Rockefeller and others and raise a ton of money year after year since he's been in Congress, or since he's been in the Senate, sorry, for other Democratic Party senators. Even though he was technically an independent, he would, you know, he block votes with the Democrats. He gets committee assignments with the Democrats. He's on the budget committee, chairman of the budget committee in the Senate, etc. So that's a little disingenuous to say, oh, hey, there's this guy Sanders who's had a career making, you know, lit off of small donations. Not true. Just not true. In that one election cycle, he went for the small donations and was pretty successful at it. But you also have to be careful. Point number two, you'd be very careful with what constitutes a corporate donation, because it's already illegal in this country, believe it or not, for corporations to give money directly to political campaigns. But what's not illegal is all sorts of ways around that. So you can have a corporation bundle checks from all the executives and higher paid ones.
Question number two was about?
Yes.
And that passed?
Yes. But if we can hold off on that for one second, let me just finish this thought real quick, but you're absolutely right. So what happens is that the corporations still bundle checks from their richest, officers, executives, and so on, and send them out in a targeted way, you know, and it could be Democrats, could be Republicans, and that's considered legal. It's PAC money. They could also do what's known as dark money, which is they set up a fake, well, for them, I mean, it's not technically fake, but I would call it fake, a fake organization that has, that you know, the corporation can directly own this organization. It can find ways around direct ownership. Doesn't matter. It's legal. It's called dark money. It's part of what dark money is. And they take this money and they just run ads for the person they want, they like, supposedly without coordinating directly with the campaign or getting approval from the campaign. That's hard to prove. Let's say they do it without approval. Same result, though. They're running ads, either attack ads on the other candidates that they don't want, or candidate or candidates, or they're trying to get somebody elected. That's perfectly legal. And as you said, I might as well talk about question two now. There was
personhood or like?
Well, the what question two is trying to begin organizing against. The recent Supreme Court.
The history of this country was like even when Lincoln was alive, there was no such thing as corporates being viewed as people.
A recent Supreme Court decision said corporations are people, so therefore they have right to free speech, and you can't limit their giving. So some of this falls under the dark money category. I'm not sure how it falls under with PACs. I believe the PAC rules are still in effect. have to double check that. But the bottom line is that this number two, question two in Massachusetts, which did pass, although it didn't get much attention, was to begin to set up a thing to study removing that.
To amend that constitutional clause, that it's not really,
they're not really people. So that's good. That's really good. Although it's a very circuitous, you know, route now. It's unclear how that's going to proceed and how long it will take to get any, you know, anything to really come of that. So question one was an example of, getting back to the original point, an example of don't fool yourselves. I would throw myself into this too because I get my hopes up. That small donations are always going to cut it. They're not. You have to try. You have to try. If you're running a socialist candidate like Socialist Alternative did with Shama Sawant in Seattle City Council, elected and reelected, that was all small donations, obviously. No one's going to fund a socialist. But it was successful. And there are other examples as well. But they tend to be local examples and not national ones. And that's for a good reason, because big money comes into play in local elections too. I didn't get confirmation of this, but I read that the midterm elections that just happened were the most expensive ever. So big money is definitely in play, and that's not easy to come to get around. Now, the way that independent political parties like workers' parties, socialist parties, labor parties have gotten started in other countries, despite the money thing, is not only gathering small donations from lots of people, but also having the labor movement involved, having unions be able to give money. They can't match corporate money, unions can't, but they can come fairly close in some times and some places, and they can do enough fundraising or gather enough resources between people and money to help, you know, get a third party, so-called third party, I don't like that term, but, you know, get an independent workers' party off the ground, a party that would not rely on corporate money in any way, whether it's dark money or PAC money or whatever. Now, here's where it gets a little tricky. A lot of liberals make the mistake, huge mistake, under campaign finance reform of throwing unions in with the corporations and try to limit the unions. And if unions are prevented from giving money to campaigns, progressive unions, then it's going to be hard to create the basis you need for a viable, you know, party that can get in the ring with big money and big capital, especially on a national or state level. That's why, you know, if you, again, study the history of any social democratic parties or even parties to the left of that in other countries, they had usually a union base of some sort. I can see ways that, you know, mass movements that could get around that, but that's pretty much going to have to be probably, you know, like 90% or something of the way forward. And that's why, for example, in the 90s, there was a serious attempt in the United States, a lot of people don't know about it, to get a labor party going, labor party advocates, and then the labor party. And that had the backing of about six unions, national unions, I think it was. And that was enough money, actually, to start to do something. But they got cold feet, to put it in a headline. About five out of the six unions involved never really broke with the Democratic Party.
Sanders was involved too, or
Sanders was not involved. No, okay. Sanders was doing his thing with. In 1992, he made his deal with the Democrats at the Kennedy School at Harvard. I personally, unfortunately, saw some of that happen. The deal was with the Democratic Party that Sanders would not be challenged by the Democratic Party in Vermont. They would not run candidates against him for House or Senate, as long as he supported their national candidates in Vermont. I'm not sure about local candidates in Vermont, Democrats, but national candidates he had to support. That was the deal. They've both lived up to it. Sanders has gotten perks from it, like I already mentioned, the committee assignments and so on. They've gotten Sanders votes. Howard Dean said that Sanders votes better than most Democrats as far as Democratic Party. he votes over 90% of the time on Democratic Party initiatives in Congress, in the Senate, and most Democrats don't even reach that. So there you have that. Now, you know, if you go back to the 70s or you know, early 80s, I think Sanders was a socialist, and he did well in Vermont. He was trying to build a third party in Vermont, and gave that up, unfortunately. So he sold out basically from the standpoint of real socialism. And now nowadays he, you know, like he did that press conference when he was running in 2016. Hey, you know, what is socialism? And he came up with, you're not going to believe this. Did we talk about this?
I've heard it.
Yeah,
before.
He came up with FDR.
Oh, no, no, no. Yeah, I've heard the one where he goes, democratic socialism is capitalism with a conscience or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. And then he did, he goes, well, he said FDR, Johnson, and I forget who the third person was.
LBJ? These were,
God. FDR, LBJ, and I think it might have been even Kennedy or somebody. Couldn't have been Kennedy. Who the heck was it? He said anyway. He mentioned three Democratic politicians. None of them, by the way, not Eugene Debs. Now Debs used to be a hero of Sanders. He still has Debs stuff in his office, you know. But Eugene Debs never ever. Once he split with the Democrats, he never and became a socialist. He never went back electorally. He always voted, ran socialist. Debs ran for president. What was it, four times, one time from prison, did very well, actually, relatively speaking, as a Socialist Party candidate. So basically you have the situation where I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought here because we went off on Sanders.
Sanders,
before that,
about
the thing
FDR
with the...
And...
No, before way back, like with the question one stuff. The money. Okay, so anyway, back to the money question. That's what I'm trying to get at. Sorry for the digression there, but basically you have the big money still rules. The only way around it is to get unions, some unions at least, plus the small donations in the context of the United States. Other countries do have campaign finance laws, but you got to watch out. I mean, it's not just the United States that the big corporations get around these laws. Guess what they just did in Brazil with the election of that extreme right winger Bolsonaro?
Yep.
I've been researching that. We've been discussing it in Socialist Alternative and stuff. The very hip, cool...
That's what happened in Honduras.
No, wait a minute. You haven't heard what I said yet. The very hip, cool, very popular social media thing that's going to save the world. You know how these, like, people kind of... a lot of liberals, but all sorts of people, they kind of ignore the fact that, like, tech is controlled... High tech is controlled by big corporations. Some of them ignore this. Like, what do you think Google is? What do you think Facebook is? These are huge mega corporations that control... I mean, that Google, for example, just created an algorithm that lowers the profile of left-wing websites. And that's a real thing. That's even, it's hit Socialist Alternative's website as well. So you're dealing with big business, but a lot of people say, no, it's the great equalizer. Anyone can get a computer. Well, not really, by the way, but anyway. Anyone can get a computer, they can get on the internet, and boom, we're off. You know, create your own website, become a millionaire, blah, blah. So it's all crap, basically. Gets monopolized. It gets unequal, like any other capitalist institution or industry.
Technical advancement under capitalism, where you know we had a telephone. You don't think they're not listening in on what you're saying on the phone?
Well, that's another thing. Yeah, that's another thing. The repression used for repression. That's kind of close to what I was going to say. So Bolsonaro in Brazil, he ends up getting around some very strict campaign finance laws about media. And media control, corporate media control, by using WhatsApp, this very cool WhatsApp thing, and just sending out a million, you know, I'm not sure if it's sort of like Twitter or what, but, you know, just sending out a million texts, let's say, to various platforms through WhatsApp, getting around the laws completely, because they haven't caught up to that yet. And that was and people in Brazil are saying that's a big factor in why he won an election. Recently, you know who I'm talking about, right? Bolsonaro, yeah. Extreme right winger. Some people call him a fascist. I think he's, I don't know, Brazil, the Brazilian socialist group that I'm familiar with down there, it's a part of the Committee for Works International, is calling him a proto-fascist, meaning he's on his way, but not quite
Perón.
There yet.
He's like,
Well, I don't know. Perón had some popular support.
What's the other one from Chile? Oh, my God. Pinochet. That's another one that was a fascist.
Yeah. Well, yeah, absolutely. But the thing with Bolsonaro is he doesn't have the popular support, which is good in the sense of mobilized, mobilized sort of paramilitary groups and mobilized groupings of, like, D-classed, middle-class people on the way down economically, he has his supporters that do nasty things. There's been political assassinations in Brazil. It's really horrible. The things he says are to the right of Trump, believe it or not. It's really horrible stuff. But as far as like having like the way the Nazis did, or the way Mussolini did, and other fascists had these literal like parallel military things going, paramilitary things going, to absolutely terrorize large sections of the population in Brazil. The left is strong, and still, relatively speaking, and Bolsonaro has still had like a Supreme Court ruling against like one of the nasty things he wanted to do. I forget the exact thing that was on the table, and he hasn't reached that point where he can control enough people really through certain like, you know, organizations, not just the state or parts of the state, to have like a popular mass movement, which is always a hallmark of fascism, unfortunately, usually starting among the you know, the richest in society, bankrolling, giving money to fascist groups historically, and then when the big business as a whole feels like they need fascism, they bring in that movement becomes a sort of a populist, right-wing populist or fascist populist movement, if you want to call it that, and starts to organize violently and so on in a big way. So like Bolsonaro may be that way. Yeah, like Indonesia in 65, yeah. Or, well, really the best examples are still the ones that, you know, Nazis, Mussolini, Franco, Caetano, and Portugal, others like that. But yeah, Indonesia is a good example in 65. A lot of people don't know about that example. And the thing with Bolsonaro is that, like Trump, actually, this is an analogy that does work with Trump. Bolsonaro, the capitalist class in Brazil wasn't too thrilled with Bolsonaro as a whole. There wasn't like a huge need for a fascist or a proto-fascist or someone so right-wing. They already had the official left, or which is more mainstream now, the PC, the PT, the Workers' Party, sort of on the run through these corruption things they engineered against Lula and his one of his successors, and in the PT. And they were kind of on the ropes, and because the PT had been in power for a while and the economy hadn't improved and people were restless. That's one reason Bolsonaro got a lot of votes. But by the way, the election was closer than people realized. It was 54 to 45 or something, which is a large spread by our standards. But in Brazil, you know, it wasn't a wipeout or anything. And there were 30% abstention rate, which is very high for Brazil. So the guy does not really have a popular mandate, but he has unfortunately a solid vote, somewhat solid vote. And basically, you know, again, the original point was that the finance laws were supposed to stop someone like that. The campaign finance laws, you know, you can see they go, people have the right, their heart is in the right place. Well, campaign finance laws will equalize elections. I'm like, no, it doesn't do that. In Europe, Brazil, places where they have a stronger campaign finance laws than here, you have the same money ruling, you know, the situation, big capital controlling elections for the most part, except in countries where there are established left-wing parties, especially multiple left-wing parties, and it's harder. Mm-hmm. They have to make alliances and stuff, and even then, it can swing to the right. I mean, look at in Europe now, you have in Poland, a right-winger, a guy that said, a leader that said he was going to march with the Nazis recently. Italy's populist right-winger, kind of like all Trump. Over the place, yeah. You know? Kind of like a Trump, yeah, but not as hated, from what I can tell. I should learn more about that, but maybe you're right. Maybe he's as bad as Trump.
What about Greece? We haven't heard anything about, as far as...
Well, Syriza's still in power. I mean, the left is still in power, but nominally, they're not really left anymore now after they caved. Also, with the right-winger in Italy, what's happening now is that Italy's under pressure from the EU to do the same thing they did with Syriza, right? Cut social programs, cut pensions, pay the money to the European Central Bank and austerity, shut the hell up, austerity, right? So austerity. And this right winger in Italy has said no. So Syriza, the left, which was really left wing back in, you know, whenever that was, 2012 or whatever, they said yes after a vote where the people said no. Yeah, that's what I mean. So he's a right winger, but he's popular because he's standing up to the European Central Bank. And Syriza didn't have the guts to do that. Syriza had the mandate. That's what's so horrible about that betrayal. Syriza had the mandate from the referendum where the vast majority of Greek people said yes, and a referendum has said, you know, we're not going to give money, our social programs, and so on. We're not going to fold them up, and we're not going to privatize, et cetera, for the European Central Bank, the big banks in Europe and around the world. And then Syriza said, ah, screw you. Yes, we are. And there's been two rounds of that now, at least. And now they're saying, at least the thing I read about Greece is, oh, the economy is recovering. And I'd like to see that recovery, you know, based on what? Based on poor people, like, you know, have nothing because their pensions have been cut, based on the youth, high youth unemployment, et cetera, et cetera. It's a joke. But it's acceptable level, and I don't know what's going on in Greece. That's a great question. You know, are people just sucking it up? Are they fighting? They fought hard. They fought for years against... First against the right, and then against Syriza, then against Golden Dawn, the right wing again. The fascist, that's a true fascist movement, unfortunately. Then you have in Hungary, a right winger. And again, I'm not trying to paint a picture of everything shifting to the right. It's not true socially, it's not true politically. But there's enough of that. There's a polarization where, because of the, you know, even if you're in a boom period, supposedly like in the U.S., and even where the economy is in some parts of Europe doing quote-unquote well, you still have the situation where for most people that's not the case. Inequality and sort of precarious living is still normal life, and they don't like it. People don't like it, and they are showing that in a lot of voting. I mean, a lot of... Sort of populist voting, right, is an expression of anger. So if you're in a country where a party claims to be left and then they do right-wing policies, they're going to pay for that. And it's a big lesson that a lot of parties don't learn. And if you want to take it by analogy here, the Democrats are anything but a left party. They're not. They're a corporate political party. But we've been sort of told, brainwashed, whatever, to pick your term, to see them as see the Democrats as more sympathetic to workers. Now, this is factually untrue, but this is what a lot of people believe. And so you have these people talking about the Democrats have abandoned their working class base. What they abandoned was a shift to a left populist shift. There have been more than one of those. There was FDR was a great example of a left populist shift. But then he himself said, I'm saving capitalism. You know, then you had McGovern, and around that time, based on the mass movement in the 1670s, you had a lot of people trying to reform the Democratic Party, failed miserably. You had Democrats voting for Nixon because they didn't like I'm talking about leading Democrats didn't like the attempts to move the Democratic Party in a so-called more progressive direction. So they ended up actually even voting for Nixon, you know. And so that went down, that whole attempt to reform the Democratic Party, that whole left populist swing went down. Now we're in another sort of, it's debatable whether we're in a left populist swing in the Democratic Party or whatever. And that's part of the midterm election thing that we should talk about. But first, why don't we finish off with question one? I mean, are the questions? I mean, it was just horrible that question one was defeated. If there's any criticism to be made of the MNA, it's simply that, and there's no magic. It's not a harsh criticism, but it seemed like some of their own members were a little soft on the question. You know, by the way, the private marketing firm that led the propaganda against question one normally works for the Democratic Party. So if you think your friends are in the Democratic Party and you're a union member or a worker, how many times do you have to get stabbed in the back before you realize it's not, you know, Malcolm X used to talk about that, you know, getting stabbed in the back by the Democrats all the time. But
he quoted that once?
Yeah, yeah. I don't remember the whole quote, yeah. But the whole thing is that what could have been done to deepen the organizing among the nurses' unions, I don't have a quick answer to that. So again, this isn't a harsh criticism, but I think they should have dipped more into the membership for activists and really tried harder to do education before they launched a ballot question. Maybe even took a vote among the members on it. Now they quote maybe they did that because they said 86% of nurses are for this, and so maybe they did have a vote. I'd have to double check on that. But something had to be. Somehow they had to get deeper into the membership and then keep the membership informed as the propaganda hit, because it hit them too, you know. Although, if you saw nurses on TV talking against question one, I talked to people in the MNA who knew the inside story. They weren't really bedside nurses. They weren't working nurses. They were people from management that had gotten their nursing degree, like, whenever. And then call themselves a nurse, and they weren't really working nurses anymore. So it was all a sham. It was all lies.
Yeah.
But we're sad. We're sad the question one went down. We hope that a similar question will come up. Or the nurses, here's another thing, which way forward? It's got to be strike action. But I would say, of course, striking is risky and difficult, especially in a public sector situation, but not impossible. I mean, you saw the West Virginia teachers and so on go out. What needs to happen with a nurses' strike is to have a lot of support from other unions. And that was another weakness in the campaign. Unions gave lip support to question one, so the more progressive ones, but they didn't mobilize their membership at all. Mm-hmm. My unions, ostensibly 4,000 members or plus at Harvard University, the Clerical and Technical Workers Union, never said a word about question one. And they will claim they're progressives to people in private. They never sent us a mailing. They never sent us they never sent an email. They never said one word about, vote yes on question one. So
I think it was more in the sphere of hospitals was more discussed.
Sure.
Because
it has to go beyond that to win it now.
Exactly.
Especially to win a successful strike.
And the reason I heard a lot about it was because where I work.
Right.
You know, pregnant women.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah.
Well,
so
we
I'm hearing that all the time and seeing yes in the beginning, but then all of a sudden towards the election, all of a sudden I'm seeing no's and no's.
And question one goes down to defeat. What do you see the next day, or what I saw the next day on social media, were people writing in with their stories about how even immediately, like day two, 3 days after, they were running into the exact problem that question one was created to start to solve. It's not going to be solved till we have national health care, some sort of, you know, socialized medicine. But basically, it would healthcare would be better even under capitalism with a better nurse to patient ratio. California already has this and has had it for a decade, you know, without any problems.
And they should have started off that way. She just said,
"Yeah,
just look on the West Coast."
They did. No, the nurses did say that. They used that.
In general, they also to take it to the next level in education.
Yeah.
To begin with, they already have in California. It's not something that's impossible. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah, but let's tell your story, because that your story I think is unfortunately common in a way.
Yeah.
So I mean, go ahead.
It was day seven,
after the vote.
Right after the vote.
Yep.
This was a Wednesday. So my mother had a surgery. I was kind of graphic. I don't want to get into it, but she couldn't go to the bathroom. And then obviously, if you can't go to the bathroom, that bacteria builds up, so you need to get that out. But she, you know, there was stitches that. I don't want to, it's graphic. But I was at work and she has Lifeline, so when you hit that button, they come and get you. They dropped her off where she had the operation. And that Wednesday.
So this is post-operation complications.
So
yeah, okay.
She operated on the 5th, came back home on the 6th because they want you out.
Yeah, another thing. Yeah,
that's another thing. In Europe, or in even where I'm from, Cuba, you're there till you're fully functional and ready to go. You know what I mean? Here they want you out because that's another patient, another check, or another amount of money that's going to kick in.
Right.
You're out. You know, get out of here.
Right.
You know, insurance doesn't cover it. They already got you on the street. You know, like you're just like somebody at a hotel or something like that.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So she's there from 6:30 all the way to like 1 o'clock with nobody taking care of her. She's in agony.
Wow. Wait a minute. 7:30, 8:30. What do you mean?
6:30.
How long?
She
got
there at 6:30.
But how long altogether?
8 hours.
8 hours. Wow.
8 hours.
So 8 hours waiting to be seen.
Yes.
Jeez.
screaming in agony, help in Spanish, what have you. And that was it. You know, yeah. I found out because I got a text.
Yeah.
And I worked right around the corner because it was Brigham. So I worked literally right around the corner down the street. And sure enough, she's there. Because I called the ambulance service and they said, well, they dropped her off. And I went to see, okay, so they dropped her off at the West Campus of Beth Israel. That's where she got operated. And sure enough, who's in the emergency room screaming her? And it's my mother. And I'm like, that's my mother. Please let me in. This is, and I show my badge. If I didn't have my badge, I'd probably get rushed.
Right.
I was so heated. I was so right. pissed off, you know.
Right.
And yeah. You guys just walking by here, you see this lady here screaming, you know, in agony. Well, we're short-staffed, and we have a long list.
We're short-staffed. Wait, hold on. So they said we're short-staffed.
So right there, I said, shame on the people that voted no on number one.
Yep.
Everybody's like, you know, guards telling me, hey, no politics in there, you know, blah, 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 blah. I'm like,
no politics, yep. Yeah, great.
Yeah.
I put a lot of question one stuff up at my job. I don't know how people reacted. They didn't. No one came up to me about it. A few people I know, we talked about it. They were going to vote yes. The yes vote was low percentage-wise, but it was still represented 250,000 at least, or something more than that, I think, which is a good place to start with support.
Yep.
Again, start again. But so did your... So you told me off air your mom understands this is related to that question, right?
Now she does. I told her to see.
Yeah.
You see why that question is so important?
Yes.
And I told her to vote, and she voted earlier.
Yes.
Because you could vote early, you know, in Cambridge.
Yeah.
And she voted early. She said she voted yes. And I said, unfortunately, it didn't pass. You see what I mean?
Well, what I said to people,
this
is going to result in people actually dying.
She's been in Cuba before. She's like, I never had to wait this long. Cuba, they take care of you right away. As soon as you walk in, what is wrong with you, man? Because they got staff levels beyond what we have here.
Yeah. I was telling people... that I talked to about this, that this could result, if it goes down to no, which it did, unfortunately, I didn't even qualify. I won't qualify. It's obvious. People are going to die. There's going to be people that are going to die from just not getting the proper care.
And she could have died a bit, you know?
Yeah.
I think the doctor said, we're going to, you know, well, you know, you're uncomfortable. Of course I'm uncomfortable. Yeah. I'm screaming, she's saying, you know, to the doctor. And if you don't get that out after a certain time, that's poisoning your, you know.
Yeah. Well, I also had the impression, and, you know, I don't have the stats to back this up. It would be a weird collection of stats, hard to gather. But here's my impression, right? I have a long commute, right, so to work. So I'm like driving around, noticing during the election period, signs, vote yes signs versus vote no signs on question one, question three signs, you know, that sort of thing. And I found this pattern that was almost without exception. The only exception I saw was at one house and one union hall I passed. And the rest of it was this weird dichotomy, this weird separation between the progressive question number three, LGBTQ rights reaffirmed. Good, great, passed with 73%, which is excellent. We had members of Social Alternative working on that campaign as well as question one on the nurses' campaign. And we had a couple of public meetings in Worcester and on where nurses came and spoke about question one and so on, you know. But so back to this, the point, though, this sort of anecdotal thing I noticed was that you'd have question one signs. And that's great. And usually with the question one signs, you'd have probably another sign like question three, or sometimes nothing, sometimes
a
Democrat politician.
A thing. I never seen
two. I hardly saw. Yeah. I'm leaving out two because I just didn't see two enough.
I think that would have been,
but
for us at least.
Oh yeah, know, definitely we supported it, but it didn't need. There's no mobilization on the streets for that. There's no, as far as I can see, no door to door or anything. But my point is that where I saw question three, I never saw question one. And that bugged the crap out of me. Because I know LGBTQ socialists and activists who healthcare is a huge issue for them. And they're very much pro question one. But I'm talking about people out on the street, people that would have Democratic Party names, right? Because that's what it comes down to in the land of the free, right? Democratic name, people's names. Vote for Joe Blow. Vote for Jill Blue. You know, what does that mean? There's, you know, anyway. But that's another story. So you'd have these names, right? Typical Democratic Party propaganda. Vote for this candidate, and I wouldn't see any question one signs there. And supposedly, some of them at least were for it. Like, you know, the mayor of Boston came out late in favor of question one, gave a little perfunctory thing. Charles Faker, the governor that's so popular here among Democrats, apparently, he was against it. No, he was totally against it. Of course, he comes. He made his money off of sick people. That Charles Faker, that scumbag. He made his money as a CEO of Harvard Pilgrim. The inflated healthcare cost that I pay for my family from that company.
Harvard Pilfrage.
When he ran it. Harvard Pilfrage, yeah. Charles Faker. I hate the way the corporate media calls him Charlie. Why do you call him Charlie? Did they send out a memo? You have to make this rich automaton seem human by calling him Charlie? When did that memo go out? You know, and they all do it. You find me a corporate media person that does not call the guy Charlie. When his real name is Charles, and it should be Sir Charles, and his last name is not Baker, it's Faker, because he fakes his way as a friend of the people into the center of power in a blue state, in a Democratic Party state, which tells me the Democrats are nothing. They're like the Republicans so much. They're not exactly like them. They're not the same. But they enable people like Charles Faker. Charles Faker can't do anything in Massachusetts without the completely controlled Democratic legislature saying, okay, Charles Faker, why did nurses have to do question one? Why couldn't that get passed in the legislature? Because Charles Faker and the Democrats aren't interested. They're interested in profits for the hospitals, you know? So Charles Faker, so anyway, LGBTQ people, I would say most of them, at least the working class ones, they are very much in favor of question one. Yet I'm in these, I go through these rich neighborhoods on my commute, and I don't see anybody putting out a three sign along with a one sign. What the hell is that about? That's liberalism. If you're a liberal, you like the profit system, and you don't understand how the profit system hurts people and is dragging down living standards and so on. There's a brilliant article. Don't have time to get into it too much, I don't think, but I want, you know, really, really urge people to read it by Andrew Dobbs. It's called No, Voting Democrat is Not Harm Reduction. And this came from Medium.com, and I think it was picked up in something bigger than that, but I don't have the source. A lot of times when I print things out, somehow the source doesn't come through, which really kills me. Why would you want that? Why wouldn't you want your media outlet, your platform, in the printout? But anyway, so you have to go to Medium.com. I think it might have been on what's that, Counterpunch as well, but just look up Andrew Dobbs. You could Google him, D-O-B-B-S. No, voting Democrat is not harm reduction. And his basic thesis is, well, instead of looking at the moment, the snapshot of election,
so
yeah,
we're
basically right,
the decline.
Yeah.
What was the boom back in the 70s or 60s? It was actually
post-war upswing from 50 to 73.
And that was the beginning of the downturn.
Well, the downturn started, it's debatable. Some people say around 68. I heard someone on the radio, economists say that if you trace wage stagnation and wage and income growth sort of stopping and starting to go down, you can trace it back to 1968. Before that, most of the things that I'd heard trace it to this pretty significant recession that happened in 1974-75. At the time, they called it the oil crisis and all that kind of stuff. They always blame it on something else. It was just a basic capitalist retraction, you know, systematic economic contraction, and pretty severe, and kind of, started to undo. It was the beginning of the unraveling of the gains of the post-war upswing for the working class. Although, again, you can bring that back to 68. You can even bring it to the early 70s where consciously, this is going to sound like conspiracy theory. It's not. It's very well documented. Big corporations in the organizations they use, like the Business Roundtable and so on, got together, big banks, and they said basically, hey, you know, yeah, record profits, blah, blah, because that's what the post-war upswing was for them, was record profits, basically, up to that time. They said, oh, record profits, blah, blah, our rate of profit can be better. we're sick of giving all this, you know, all this to the unions and to the, you know, the mass movements of the time. They made a lot of concessions based on the pressure of the mass movements of the 60s and 70s and the strength of the labor movement at that time. And so they basically went on the offensive the other way. You know, that's the beginnings of neoliberalism, and it's continued ever since. And so what this guy, Andrew Dobbs, does in this article, No Voting Democrats is Not Harm Reduction, is he just takes more than a snapshot. He says, okay, you know, we can talk about an election day. What happens the day after? And what happened the day before, over the last 40 years? And he goes through everything. He goes from economic stats to things like abortion availability, and shows that it's gone downhill. So, and he makes a point, of course, of saying, well, wait a minute. Here we had, under Clinton, we had 2 years, the first 2 years of the Clinton administration that in the 90s that were completely controlled by the Democratic Party. The House, the Senate, the presidency, completely controlled. They could have passed any legislation they wanted in those 2 years. Same thing happened with Obama. When he got elected, 2 years of unfettered reign, they had the House, the Senate, and the presidency, completely Democrat, could have passed anything. And nothing significant was passed. Obamacare was started, but there's a lot of holes in that. But things like Employee Free Choice Act, which was the bone thrown to the unions at the time under Obama and so on. And so on, and he goes through and just gives the stats to show that, well, whether it's Republican or Democrat, your life, your living standards are going downhill for the majority. If you're in the working class majority, health care, how bad that is. It's just brilliant stuff. But it's like 40 pages. I haven't written a summary yet. Don't let the 40 pages scare you from reading it. Please look it up. No Voting Democrat is Not Harm Reduction. And harm reduction is this intentional phrase that's been used.
Lesser of evil.
It's a new lesser evil thing. It's a new phrase for lesser evilism. They're saying voting Democrat is harm reduction. I'm sure it is harm reduction once in a while, for a moment, you know. What happens afterwards? And then when is it not harm reduction? Well, I'll tell you when it's not harm reduction. If you're living in Washington, D.C., and just this past year you voted for an increase in wages for tipped workers and won a referendum by a handy 60-something percent, and you had the Democratic Party completely dominating the city council, there's no Republicans in a place like Washington, D.C., they got together and the majority of them overturned that referendum. It's gone. The tipped workers will not. Just selling out for some restaurant food capitalists, you know, in the nation's capital. Or go to Seattle just yesterday, this week. Shama Sawant and Social Alternative have been organizing, along with many other community groups and other types of groups, progressive groups, for more more money for housing, low-income housing. Seattle has a huge homeless population, a real homeless crisis, real gentrification crisis. And to stop city funds going to basically, how can I phrase this nicely?
So Bowen?
More for the cops. That's another thing. Amazon, there's an Amazon tax that, well, I'll go into that too. Let me just write this down here. We got a lot of examples here.
Somebody but I'll say them going quick. $15 is like, okay, give it to them.
Here we go. Well, let me do the housing and cop one first. All right, let me give you some context. A couple years ago, Social Alternative helped lead a movement called the Bunker Buster movement in Seattle. And that was stopping funding for a huge new political police headquarters. I'm sorry, I don't know why I said political. Well, it is political, but I'll say police headquarters. And it included like the city council touring the police headquarters as they existed. And Chama was like, that's fine, you know. And so they won on this. They won. We won. It was a great victory, one of many in Seattle, with Shama Sawant leading the way. Sawant, if you want to Google this and check on what I'm saying. So it was never built. So, of course, the cops love us in Seattle. And this time around, it's a new police.
You're being sarcastic, right?
Yes.
Okay.
That's pure sarcasm.
All right.
So now we're going to.
I'm scared if they love us.
Now we're going to. Now we're going to a police negotiation for more money and so on. And some of the things in the contract are okay, But the basic thing of a big raise for the police is not okay, since other things, since they're saying at the same time, the rest of the city council, the Democrats are saying, not Sharma, they're saying there's no money for this, no money for that, no money for housing, no money for education, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's typical, like, austerity in a supposed boom time, which we're doing in Boston. I don't know if we have time for this, but there's another round of school closings happening in Boston. This is the third one in recent memory. And Boston, as you know, is the high-tech heaven right now. And people are making money. The top less than 1% are making more money than you can dream of.
Yesterday, I was discovering what they call East Boston.
Uh-oh, what they do to East Boston? I've been there in a few years.
Oh, my God.
I used to like the food there, man.
I went to Orient Heights in Wood Island. There's this bike path that goes right behind it. So I started walking and exploring it, you know, because it's just bike path. There's no cars.
Yeah.
And this thing connects. You know how there's that highway junction there?
No.
Then you got the airport.
I don't remember. I don't know it that well. Go ahead.
You got this big highway junction.
Yeah.
And this bike path goes literally right underneath it. And then there's this all like, wow, I've never seen this part of East Boston. And you can actually see the financial district. It's beautiful.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
Beautiful. Right by the airport, T station.
Oh, boy.
Charter school, Boston Public Library. I'm like, what are these two doing together like this?
Yeah.
This is not.
By the way, for our listeners, again, we're being very local today, which is fine, but there was a charter school referendum 2 years ago, was it?
Yeah.
That the big business, the corporation, the Democrats all lined up behind, or most of them, and it failed. That was one of the happiest days of my life. Well, I shouldn't exaggerate, but it was a happy day where, what was it, like 60-something% voted to not raise the cap on charter schools. And in other words, they voted to limit the number of charter schools being created in Massachusetts. And that was a big victory for the people, because everything was lined up against them. The corporate media, the political parties of the corporations, Republicans and Democrats. Here it's mostly Democrats. And yet we still won. And there was another one that was generated by the teachers union, another one where members of Socialist Alternative and others were directly involved in, and I had a close working knowledge of that campaign. I helped it a little bit. And I still was surprised at the vote. I was like, I don't know. I think we're going to win. I'm not sure. You know, the signs were, again, using the anecdotal sign method, which is not the best way to figure things out. There were a lot of signs for the, what was it, no on two, I think
no.
it was.
Yeah, no on
two?
The charters.
Well,
yeah.
What, no on two, I think it was, yeah. And so, and that was the vote to limit the charter schools. Based on that, I felt pretty good, but I was just, I had an uneasy feeling in my stomach, and yet we ended up 60-something%. It was a great victory. Getting back to Seattle, though, and you didn't think I was going to go back there, right? You thought that digression went too far? No, we're going to jump back into Seattle. And basically, homelessness, need for more money for housing, for low-income housing, and homeless services, but especially for low-income housing, and also facing, though, the police contract. It was going to give a lot more money to the police. So Sharma and Social Alternative and community groups have been working hard to get a bill passed. Well, actually, to number one, stop the police contract from going through, and number two, get a bill passed for more money for homeless for low-income housing. Now, one of the beauties of that, defeating the police bunker in Seattle back in 2 years ago, was that it freed up, part of the deal was that in defeating it was that money that was going to go to that went actually to low-income housing. But the crisis is so severe that was not enough.
It's like we were talking last show about what if I won the million, you know,
yeah.
Would I put a dent? Would I, like,
you know. Yeah, if you won the lottery and gave it all away the next day. It'd be a dent, but not much of one. And it'd be a dent that the corporation would pound out, to use the metaphor, back to the smooth surface of business as usual of exploitation and homelessness and people dying when they don't need to from being sick and so on in a country where sick people are seen as a source of profit rather than a service, rather than something to help people with. But anyway, so what happened, and this is back to the point of you're the no harm reduction thesis about the Democrats. Well, guess what happened? All the Democrats, including two nominally left-wing ones, or self-described left-wing Democrats, they all voted for the cop increase and against the more money to go to low-income housing. Yeah. That just happened last week. And there are people, even in Social Alternative, who are, you know, willing to promote progressive, so-called progressive, so-called left-wing Democrats in certain campaigns and at certain times. And I think that's a mistake, but that's the way it is. And in this case, a couple people that I know that are into that, they were mad. They were like, all of a sudden, not into it. And they sent out a very good Facebook post saying, this is what the being Democrat means. It means you sell out, you know, blah, blah, blah. It was a very good Facebook post. They're from Seattle, the people that did that. My only quibble with that is I would say, because they said something about being surprised that at least the two progressive Democrats didn't stand up. And I'm like, see, that's where we differ. I would not be surprised. I've seen it a million times living in Boston, you know, living around Boston as well. But you mentioned in passing something about Amazon. So that's another example. Amazon tax in Seattle.
So they went up with the 15. Oh, we'll give them $15 all of a sudden.
Well, forget that. That's not. Yeah. We're not talking about 15. We're talking about whether they came up with the 15 thing in a response to the Amazon tax. So maybe it is relevant. So you're right. But here's how it went down on the ground. People started to organize, including Social Alternative, and Shama Sawant was a big leader in this. We need to tax Amazon. Amazon is a mega, you know, richest corporation in the world now, or something like that. And yep, Bezos is the richest person. Jeff Bezos, head of Amazon.
Compared to Carnegie, back in the 1800s.
Let me hear this. Yeah, go ahead.
No, did you not hear that? That they're comparing it to, like,
yes,
this is like the
who
Carnegie.
Won? So who won?
And the oil biz tycoons.
I get
of the
it.
Time,
but who know? Won? Bezos or Carnegie? Did they compare it that way?
They compare it to that.
But did they compare who ends up
no, they
the
ended
winner?
Up, no, no, no. What they said is they compare so-called? It to the new Carnegie of the 20th
okay,
century.
Okay, I get
that's
it.
What I, mean.
I get
not
it.
That,
yeah, that's an
yeah.
excellent comparison. And so the point is, though, this happened, like, was it last year or earlier this year? I think it was earlier this year. A successful, through this huge campaign, again, Shama Swat helping lead a Social Alternative, being involved with it, other groups, got a tax, a modest tax, actually, passed on Amazon profits in order to give them, you know, in order to, again, try to mitigate the effects of gentrification caused by Amazon in Seattle, so that money would go to, again, housing, you know, homeless services and to low-income housing. And we had a little battle with the Democrats about giving money to homeless services rather than giving it to permanent housing. But anyway, it went through. It passed. The Democrats, you know, felt the pressure, and they voted for it. And that's great, right? Yay. Guess what happened? Literally like 2 weeks later. I mean, it was so fast, the turnaround. They all abandoned ship. They reversed their own vote. All except Shama, the socialist, and one Democrat. The rest all voted to... And the one that didn't vote to overturn it had some odd reasons, but... it wasn't like a principled stance. It was like, blah, 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 you know. But anyway, so the other Democrats, all of them, voted to overturn their own vote and get rid of the tax on Amazon just based on noise from Bezos, you know. And actually, Bezos has some supporters. Unfortunately, I have to be honest, some supporters in the labor movement. There's some unions that get jobs from Amazon, like the iron workers, mm-hmm. and their leadership wants to just, you know, like there's like their presence before a king. They want to beg Bezos for more jobs, so they support him in public on certain things like against the Amazon tax, which is a huge betrayal of the working class. Can you imagine being a union leader and saying, all I care about is the, you know, people in my union, and to hell with every other union, to hell with the other working class people as a whole? Well, that's where we're at. We've been there since the 50s, at least, with a lot of labor leaders, and they made a dirty deal with Amazon and added to their noise about the tax, and that was enough. Even before, even without the iron workers, it was enough to have the Democrats run and hide on that question and overturn their own thing. Now, the good news is, there is good news. The Amazon tax made a splash in the corporate media. And so in California, there's two cities that passed the equivalent of the Amazon tax, I read. I have to double check the facts on that before I say which cities. But that's very good news. Anyway, we have to give our legal identification. We are... WMFO Medford, WMFO in Medford, also known as Tufts Freeform Commercial Free community-based radio at 91.5 FM. WMFO, go to WMFO.org to listen by computer. And we're going to take a quick musical interlude and come back with a public service announcement or two. Thanks for listening. You're listening to Social Alternative Radio on WMFO.